In the wake of the publication of her memoir, First Comes Love, commentator Marion Winnick found herself swept into the role of professional widow. She toured the country for her book, which details her marriage to a gay man who had AIDS and eventually died. The pinnacle of her roadshow came on daytime talk television. Today, excerpts from Marion Winnick's diaries.
April 11th, 1996. A publicist from Random House called today to say I'm going on the Oprah Winfrey Show. She was ecstatic. She says Oprah has the power to make my book an overnight hit, like she did for In the Kitchen with Rosie and Spiritual Abundance and some other book that had been left for dead years ago until Oprah whipped it out and clutched it to her breast. I've never actually watched the show, but everyone says I'm going to love her. I can't help thinking there will be some major breast-clutching involved. April 16th. Amy, the Oprah producer, is bouncy and enthusiastic on the phone, though they haven't yet had time to read my book. Meanwhile, we have to find some other guests. What other guests, I ask? You know, other women who knowingly married gay men, she says. I was dubious. I've never thought of my experience as an example of a widespread phenomenon. April 25th. I stand corrected. When we arrive at the studio, there are three green rooms bulging with people, vibrating with voices. There are Americans, Canadians, homo, hetero, and bisexuals, older couples, military couples, couples with AIDS, divorced couples, a chatty gay clergyman, and a natty Miami psychologist. Clearly the focus of the show has broadened, to say the least. So what did they do? Make an announcement at O'Hare? If you know or have ever known a gay person, meet the bus for the Oprah Winfrey Show at Terminal C. Amy comes to get me to record my voiceover for the montage of photos and video that will introduce my story. She leads me through a series of heavy locked doors that recall the opening credits of Get Smart. Has Oprah had a chance to read my book? I venture. Oh, I wouldn't know, she replies. She's so busy. She taped 5 shows yesterday, and she's fighting a cold. Great. Maybe this is poetic justice. I don't watch her show. She doesn't read my book. In a small glassed-in sound booth behind the control room, I wait while they cue up the video. I notice a glass teapot on a tripod over a flame warmer, a matching mug at its side. How nice. The tea is hot, herbal, potent. There is a frantic pounding on the thick window overlooking the control room. Horrified faces stare at me. A young woman flings open the door of the chamber and lifts the cup from my hand. That's Oprah's tea. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, God, I'm really sorry. She shakes her head and pours the contaminated tea down the sink. The video montage now seems unbelievably sappy, as does the script, which I have trouble believing I actually wrote. He was a professional figure skater, handsome, charming, openly gay. I was a graduate student, a little crazy, a little romantic, 24 years old. But I knew from the moment I met him at Mardi Gras that my heart was his forever. On to hair and makeup. God, what a beautiful blouse, exclaims the makeup artist. I bought it yesterday at Bergdorf's, I say, perking up slightly. It's Isaac Mizrahi. That periwinkle color is going to look fabulous on camera, especially with your eyes. Ah, yes, perhaps things are back on track. I ask the hairdresser to give me a chignon, and she produces a towering I Dream of Jeannie number with the aid of a rat comb, dozens of bobby pins, and 2 cans of hairspray. A pair of sparkly earrings completes my look. Best-selling author Barbie. There's no way I'll be mistaken for one of the hoi polloi in this getup. At long last, we are lined up and led to the studio, where the lights are bright and disco music is booming and the audience cheers our arrival. And now, says the announcer, Oprah! Like any self-respecting superhero, she enters to her theme music, wearing a wan smile, coughing, but otherwise looking swell. She is not carrying a copy of my book and makes no eye contact with me as she passes the platform. As she is mic'd and fussed over by her assistants, she banters with the adoring audience. After a particularly hacking series of coughs, she asks the producer for her tea, and a message is sent to the control room to get it for her. Several minutes go by. No tea. Oprah is ticked. I blush with guilt as her minions scurry. 3, 2, 1, action! Oprah begins to read. Today we meet women who have had the experience everyone dreads when they hear their husband say these words, Honey, I'm gay. Oprah delivers her lines with tons of expression and vivacity, but in between seems ill, exhausted, and almost as bored as I am. Zipping through the on and off stage guests, she gives each eager soul bearer the bum's rush. You get your corny video montage, your three setup questions, your facial or verbal reaction from Oprah, amusement, concern, disbelief at your stupidity, and thank you very much, next case. The stories, if they can be called that, are reduced to a string of non sequiturs. We had everything. A house, a yard, a finished basement. I guess I knew I was gay, but I didn't want to admit it. I didn't even know what gay was. He wasn't looking at the girls, he was looking at the men. Now that I have AIDS, I don't have time to be angry. Oprah explains that we are about to meet someone who actually knew her husband was gay when she married him and has documented their, quote, strange life in her book, First Comes Love. No positive adjective is applied to the book at this or any other time. Meet National Public Radio commentator Marion Nick, she says, her eyes moving so quickly over the teleprompter that my name loses one of its two syllables. Not only has she not read my book, she's never even heard my name. Things do not improve during the interview. So, you wanted to marry a gay man? Well, not exactly. Did your husband have to be really drunk to make love to you? Well, not exactly. And I'm thinking this is not exactly the kind of conversation that sells a million books. I feel nothing but relief when we go to commercial, at which point Oprah leans toward me, her face animated. I love that blouse, she says. I'm so glad, I reply sweetly. I bought it just for you. Later, I sit in the empty gate at the airport holding my souvenir Oprah coffee mug, stunned by how the amazing story that got me on the show in the first place now seems completely banal and sordid. Do smart people in New York really believe this show has something to do with books, people who read them, or life as we know it? June 10th. The book tour is over. The reviews have been written. The hype has been hyped. And the Oprah show has not been scheduled to air yet. I've stopped asking the publicist, she stopped calling the producer, and only my mother still asks about it. July 12th. My pregnant sister went into labor at 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday. Jason was born at 10:59, and Oprah came on at 4. The three of us were watching on her hospital television when my sister said she didn't feel well, and then she was hemorrhaging, and after that we kind of didn't pay attention. I did notice they fixed the part where Oprah said my name wrong and cut out the questions about Tony having to be drunk to have sex with me. Not many people mentioned the show afterwards. Even people at Random House maintain a discreet silence with no spike in sales to report. But those who do say how much they loved the blouse. Well, it is a really beautiful blouse, and I'm so glad I bought it.
Marion Winnick lives in Austin, Texas, and comes to us by way of member station KUT.